Hello, friends, and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. We're glad you've joined us on this ninth day of April 2015. I'm your teacher, Josh, and I'm joined in the studio by Ellen and Simon, and we're going to be here for the next 3 days talking about technology and its impact on our lives. And I'm very glad you're with us. Open your April magazines to pages 20, 21, and 22 for our technology lesson titled The End of Absence. It's from an article from last year in the Chicago Tribune where our author is asking some really interesting questions about how our connected life has impacted our relationships and also our time with ourselves. Remember, do you even remember life before smartphones and the internet, Ellen?
I do. I didn't get my first smartphone until maybe 5 years ago. So it's not completely a foreign concept to me, but I must admit that my phone has drastically changed my life in many ways and many habits.
Are you addicted to technology, Simon?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Well, it's good that
Very
you admit
much.
That.
I'm kind of a latecomer. I only got into the smartphones maybe 4 years ago, but it really did change my life. And I actually feel very positively about the way it's changed my life. I think life is much better, much more convenient with smartphones than it was without.
The title of the article talks about, we're definitely going to talk about some of the pros and the benefits of technology. But our author in this title indicates that something is missing from our lives while it's being filled with all this technology. And what is that?
That is, as we see in the subtitle, is introspection, the time to kind of reflect and give ourselves time to just really be with ourselves.
Yeah, not staring at a screen.
I actually think I downloaded an app for introspection the other day. So I think this might not be a problem anymore.
How can an app help you meditate, Simon?
I can't. I'm just kidding.
No, you need to unplug sometimes. That's this idea of absence, not being connected to your Facebook page or to email, not being reachable, right? Do you remember when you weren't reachable?
Yes, it was. I remember actually living in Taipei and how hard it was to meet people, you know, in sort of the time before cell phones, right? I mean, even with cell phones, you would call people and you would have to set an appointment, like where you're going to meet,
right?
What time you're going to meet. You couldn't just say, like, let's meet in that area. You had to actually have a specific time and you both had to get there on time or somebody was kind of mad and put out and. There's a lot more responsibility.
Right. Now you can just connect when you get there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You just kind of show up and then call the person, find out where they are.
I remember BB call in Taipei. That was the pager that you had before smartphones. Some of you remember that out there. And you had to page the person when you wanted to reach them. And then people learn the system of sending messages through the pages.
Yeah,
and
with all the numbers,
what that meant. Meet me here. Call me later. It was a different time.
I just remember having sort of horrible experiences on the MRT. Like you had to tell people, I'll meet you at the second car on the train going east, you know, at 8:03. Things like that.
Now we're always connected. Yeah. Well, why is introspection good, Ellen?
Well, I think we're all human beings and we're all people who kind of need to think about many things in our life. We have a lot of things going on. And I think it's always good to reflect on what was good and what was bad about that.
Mm-hmm. So you can look back on things that have happened to you and evaluate those. Did I make good decisions? Maybe be thankful for the things in your life.
Right, exactly.
And then also looking forward, right, Simon?
Yeah, it helps you know yourself better and be able to know what kinds of decisions would be good for you to make, which kinds of things you can handle, which kinds of things you don't handle as well. So introspection is a very important thing.
But has it been replaced by connection, by text and Line and WhatsApp and Facebook? Do we process things now through digital communication?
Well, I think in some ways we do. But I'm not sure that introspection has really been replaced. I think a lot of people are sort of what we might call introspective by nature, which means they do a lot of introspection naturally. And I think those people are still going to do a lot of introspection. Like, for example, text messages are much harder to understand, you know, what the person is thinking if you get a message that's written than if you're talking to them. You can't pick up the mood from the way their voice sounds or whatever. And so if you get a message that's a little strange, it kind of causes you to think introspectively about what's going on, right?
Okay.
Maybe that's just completely wrong.
No, I think definitely the reflective people will still reflect. But I think a lot of us have filled those times where we used to reflect with checking in on Facebook.
Right, and I even think some people might kind of do their introspection processing through Facebook. They might write, you know, entries about the turmoil that they've gone through today. And those are kind of things that maybe in the past we would have processed on our own, or maybe spoke with our closest friends or closest confidants with, instead of sharing it with a billion Facebook users.
Do people still keep diaries? Journals?
That's what Facebook is for. Is it not an online journal share with your friends?
I mean, that was often a common place to reflect on your life, right? Mm-hmm. To write out the events of the day, the meaningful moments in life, to maybe go back and read a few pages from previous entries.
Right.
I think people do, but I think maybe the medium, the way they do it, has changed. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll know from your own Facebook list of friends that people have very different levels of privacy sort of set, right? I know a few people who actually write blogs but don't let anybody see the blog. So wow. They're basically just doing a journal but in the cloud, right?
It's like if a tree falls in the forest and no one hears what I'm thinking.
It's that dark net, right?
Right.
The internet you can't find.
Well, let's jump into our lesson and hear what our author, Richard Asa, has to say. We'll begin where you see the nine.
The end of absence. Author says technology is threatening introspection. Michael Harris's epiphany came when, as a writer at Vancouver Magazine, he looked at his computer screen and saw 14 open windows, while his smartphone was buzzing almost nonstop. What attention he had left was bouncing back and forth between the two. In that moment, he says, he realized he was everywhere and nowhere at once. For years, Harris had thought about what amounted to this moment, so he decided to quit his job and write The End of Absence, reclaiming what we've lost in a world of constant connection, a memoir in which he meditates on life before the internet and how we're losing the natural gravitation towards silence and deep reflection in favor of instant gratification and likes.
Thank you, Steve. Well, I think we talked about our title and deck. How does our lesson start, Simon?
Well, it starts with a man named Michael Harris having an epiphany, which means a moment of realization or sort of an important insight. He's come to a new understanding of something.
I picture a light bulb going off above your head.
And of course, this happens for him. He's a writer working at Vancouver Magazine, and it happens because he's doing so many things all at the same time.
Yeah, he's got 14 windows or tabs open. Do you work like that, Ellen?
I must admit, at times I do have, double-digit numbers open.
Wow.
She does. I sit next
and
to
that's,
her.
That's your browser and Word and Excel and all the different programs?
Yeah, at times, I feel like at my last job especially, we had a lot. We had two monitors.
Wow.
And, you know, we had to work with two monitors, and there were definitely more than 10 windows open.
So, could you just tab through those and multitask, or?
You try your best. I can't say it was successful, but you do your best and you kind of work through it.
But his smartphone was also buzzing, and he realized that in that moment, he says, he was everywhere and nowhere at once.
Hmm.
What does that mean?
Well, it's kind of a saying that we often say, and it kind of talks about the appearance of busyness or appearance of having this fulfillment where in reality you really don't have anything. So another way that we've said this is instead of everywhere and nowhere at once, sometimes we say everything but nothing as well.
That's meta. That's heavy.
is meta?
Oh, you haven't heard that? That's the common term of like something that I cannot grasp. It's just way up there, out there, beyond me. But it's a good point. It's this idea of, can we really be in the moment when we're spread across so many devices, so many platforms, so many calls for your attention?
Yeah. It reminds me of a line from Lord of the Rings, where he describes himself as being like butter spread over too much toast.
Mm.
Like he's spread too thin, so the taste is gone, right? Yeah. Spread too thin. That's too much going on. Can't focus.
Do you feel that's a problem for you, Simon?
Absolutely. Yeah. So now I've changed my mind, and I think the smartphones are a bad thing.
You put it in the drawer.
It was a quick sell. It was a quick sell, that argument.
Well, I think, we're certainly diagnosing lots of children with attention deficit disorder or hyperattention deficit disorder, and they're on medication and seeing psychologists. But I think a lot of adults have it, too. Mm-hmm. That we're just spreading ourselves so thin across so many different things attracting our attention.
Sure. I think I think one sure sign of that is there's sort of this phenomenon, which is like a thing people experience, of the phantom phone ring.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? You feel like
it.
Your leg is buzzing, and you grab your phone to check it, but of course it's nothing. It's like your body is super alert for anything that might be happening with
your
phone.
Anticipating that phone call.
Yeah, yeah. Even when it's not there.
Also, what they've said in the brain, the neurons that are fired when you see a text message come through.
Mm-hmm.
You get addicted to that little rush.
A rush.
Of, a comment or a like, mm-hmm. or a line message,
yeah.
or a sticker. Are you finding yourselves like Pavlov's dog returning to these apps?
I won't lie, being on Facebook, it can get very addicting. And I myself have, in the last year, taken two breaks from Facebook.
Like,
I took two-week breaks, and it was probably the most fulfilling time I've had. It was like the best experience I've had in a long time.
Well, then why did you go back?
Being overseas, living overseas, Facebook is sometimes kind of the only way I can connect with friends overseas, stay connected, kind of still there in their life. So for me, Facebook is kind of an evil that is necessary in certain ways. But it was very, very nice to kind of just unplug for periods of time.
She survived, mm-hmm. Simon.
It's very stressful, though, to unplug.
Did you miss her when she was off Facebook?
He didn't
you
notice.
Know, we just, talk.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be honest, the first time I did it, I did it, early last year around March, and then I did it again in December. The first time in March last year was very, I want to say, painful, because you really are, like, withdrawing.
Did you have FOMO? Fear of missing out. We've taught that on the advanced class.
I guess you could say some of that, yeah.
Describe FOMO. What is that feeling?
It's just, you feel like, okay, well, if I'm not keeping up with updates, or I'm not keeping up with, event invites, maybe I'm not being invited to certain things, or I'm not up to date.
You don't want to miss the hot gossip. You don't want to be left out of the party, right?
Yeah, yeah. But the second time I kind of came off Facebook, I didn't have any of those emotions. I just kind of came off.
people had already stopped inviting her to events on Facebook because of the first time.
Or at that point, I kind of just didn't care.
Maybe. Well, going on to our next paragraph, I want to talk more about Facebook because our author hints at it here. Harris had thought about what amounted to this moment, meaning what was the build-up to this epiphany he had about being everywhere and nowhere. So he decided to quit his job at Vancouver Magazine and write The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. Does that describe our world accurately, Simon?
Yeah, I think, well, for many people, obviously, in the world, we are constantly connected. Not just like we were when we used, you know, plain cell phones where we could always be reached. But more, it's like now we're always actually interacting because it's not just a matter of phone or text message. It's also Facebook stuff. You can get work stuff through the phone. You're just always available. And so, yeah, I think we are constantly connected in our world.
And describe this book a little bit, Ellen.
Sure. It's a memoir in which we see Michael Harris meditating on life before the internet and how we're losing the natural gravitation towards silence.
Life before the web. Wow. We had to use paper maps. We had to use the yellow pages and phone books to find things. And then something our listeners probably have no idea what they are. Encyclopedias. Remember those, Simon?
Yeah, I do.
Alan, did you ever read through an encyclopedia?
I did. I remember at one point my parents seriously considering buying a set of encyclopedias.
Are they glad they didn't?
Yes, I think it was a good savings.
Well, he meditates on life before the web and how we're losing the natural gravitation or the pull in our life towards silence and deep reflection. And what's it been replaced with, Simon?
Well, he basically says it's been replaced with instant gratification that we get from things like likes or, you know, text messages or being connected. And instant gratification, of course, means instant, meaning right away, and gratification, meaning a good feeling you get from having this thing right away.
Right. We're a society that wants it now, wants it fast. We don't want to wait for anything. Even instant is sometimes too slow.
Yeah. This is the part I'm not sure I fully agree with this, you know, back to my original smartphones are good thing. Because I remember in a life before smartphones doing things like turning on the stereo to avoid like silence, right? If it's, you know, your family's gone and it's too quiet at home, you turn on the stereo. Or people used to turn on the TV and leave the room just so it would be like the TV was playing, that kind of thing.
Ambient noise.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure we ever really had this gravitation towards like silence and introspection. I think people have always kind of either wanted to be introspective or tried really hard to escape it.
We want to fill the gaps, you're saying.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting point, though, because the connection has really sped up in terms of like how involved we are with everything going on everywhere.
Well, let's go a little deeper into life before the internet with our second reading.
Remembering life before the internet. The book, essentially, focuses on what Harris calls the straddle generation, that group of people who remember life before the internet and are immersed in it now. They are the demographic that will most naturally understand the book's subtle, even enigmatic premise more than any other, that there is a before and an after we can preserve to our benefit. It is enigmatic, Harris says, of this loss he writes about, but it's also so big that it's surprising we've ignored that part of things for so long. We're so entranced by what online life gives to us that we've shied away from those intangible things that it has stripped from us over time. Harris writes in an elegant, accessible, and often hilarious way as he deals with his own internet demons. But he also backs up his premises with more than 200 references that include research studies, presentations, and comments from a host of pundits, from Mark Twain to Marshall McLuhan.
So what does the book essentially focus on, Simon?
Well, it focuses on a group of people that here are called the straddle generation. And straddle means you stand on both sides of something. Often we use it by talking about fences, as in a person is straddling the fence, meaning they're actually standing sort of over the fence, so they've got one leg on each side of the fence. And here, this straddle generation is actually straddling time. So they were born early enough to remember life before the internet, but they're currently living in an internet world, and they're participating in it, being connected.
So the internet, of course, grew in popularity around, what, 94, 95, maybe a little bit later for some of us.
Yeah.
How about Canada? Did they come in the 2000s?
I got my first email address in 1995 or 1996, so I think about that time.
Okay, yeah. So if you were, you know, over 3 or 4 years old by then, you'd be in your 20s or 30s, of course into your 40s. If you're a digital native, you might even be younger than that. But it's this idea of someone that remembers life before we were all addicted to the internet. And they are the demographic, Harris says, that will most naturally understand the book's subtle premise. How does he describe that premise, Ellen?
He describes it using the word enigmatic, which just really means it's mysterious, it's kind of perplexing or hard to understand.
Great. And he says that there is a before and an after we can preserve to our benefit. Does that make sense to you, Simon?
Yeah, sure. You know, when you think back to life before the internet, there were a lot of inconveniences, but there were a lot of nice things too, right? And so those are things worth keeping.
Do you miss thumbing through maps?
I actually, a little known fact about my life is that I spent some time studying geography.
Oh.
And so I am a bit of a map fan. I still like to pull out the paper maps just to feel them with my fingers.
There you go. It lives on. He says it's also so big that it's surprising we've ignored that part of things for so long. We're so entranced, he says, by life online. When you're entranced, it means you can't look away from something. It's so wrapped up and so attracted you. But it's what, it says, it helps us to shy away from intangible things. What does intangible mean?
Intangible is just this idea of things you can't physically grasp. So, when we talk about ideas, those are, there are tangible, intangible things because we can't actually sit there and physically grasp onto ideas. Whereas once we develop ideas into products, then it becomes a tangible object.
Is that what the connected life has done to us, Simon? We're so focused on the here and now and where we're going and what we're doing that we shy away from abstract things?
Well, yeah, I think that is true. Like, for example, you think about family game nights. I remember at one point in like the 1990s, 1980s, it was, sort of this thing people did. They'd have like a family night where the family gets together and kind of plays games and stuff. And that's the sort of thing where the game you play isn't really the point, right? And so you can get rid of the game without losing anything. But if getting rid of the game means you also spend less time together as a family, that's an intangible thing you've lost. And I think our interest in being constantly connected has taken a lot of those intangible things from us.
Well, Harris writes, it says, in an elegant, accessible, and hilarious way about his own internet demons. And these are the things that haunt him, right? They're maybe, bad habits or negative feelings he has about the internet. Do you have any internet demons, Ellen?
None that I want to admit on air.
Well, he backs up his premises, he says, with several references from things like research studies and presentations and comments from a host of pundits.
Yeah, pundits.
Pundits is a term we usually hear about from politics, right?
That's right. It's basically a person who gives their opinion, but it's kind of an educated opinion, or they're, you might not say they're an expert, but they're definitely a person who's familiar with the subject enough to be asked a lot of questions about it and give their opinions about it.
And you think Mark Twain has opinions about the connected lifestyle?
Mark Twain had a lot of opinions. For those people who've read Mark Twain stuff, you know that he was very active in what we might call social commentary. So he was always making comments about the way society worked and the way life was. That's also true of the second person there, Marshall McLuhan. I know him because he's a Canadian. And so.
And what was his most famous line? What is he most quoted?
Oh, he had this idea called the medium is the message.
Sure.
Yeah, and the idea there was basically that the medium, which is the way you are communicating, actually is saying something. It is a message. So if you choose to make an announcement over TV, it actually gives a different message than if you choose to make an announcement over the radio.
Right. And that was something he said in the 70s, I think. So long before the internet and smartphones, maybe even the 60s, right? Yes, famous communication scholar. Well, we hope you come back tomorrow for day two of The End of Absence as we continue to discuss technology's impact on our lives. Until then, goodbye, everyone.
Bye.